This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Washington Today for Friday, January 28th, 2022. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some of today's headlines. 10 people remain injured after a snow-covered bridge in Pittsburgh collapsed Friday morning, all happening ahead of President Joe Biden's scheduled visit to the area to talk about infrastructure. We'll hear more from President Biden shortly. The United States has called for a meeting of the United Nations Security Council to address Russia's behavior and the buildup of Russian troops on Ukraine's border. We'll take you to the Pentagon to hear the latest from top military officials. Six rockets struck Baghdad's international airport facility on Friday, damaging two commercial planes, but causing no casualties. That's according to Iraq's military. The Associated Press reporting that the attack marks an escalation of a series of rocket and drone strikes that have targeted the U.S. and their allies, as well as Iraqi government institutions since the start of the year. This recent attack, though, follows the second anniversary of the U.S. strike that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi militia commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. We begin in Pittsburgh, where a 50-year-old bridge collapsed at 7 a.m. Friday, requiring rescuers to rappel nearly 150 feet and form a human chain to reach occupants of a bus that had plummeted into a park ravine. The collapse came hours before President Joe Biden was to visit the city to discuss infrastructure. At least 10 people were injured, but officials report no fatalities. Let's listen in on President Biden speaking to officials at the site of the bridge collapse.
Were you worried that there had been an explosion or that there had been...
We weren't sure whether the gas had caused this or whether the leak was, you know, a result of the bridge collapse. So we just weren't sure about that.
How long did it take to get the company to shut off the...
Yeah, probably about a half hour.
Half hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So that was just continuing outside of the...
So there's obviously there's another line right here as well. So that was rushing out. So.
And it's probably too early for joggers to be done.
There was a few joggers, actually. There was a few. One of them actually helped us get some people out of the car today. So. Yeah.
It's a miracle, Mr. President. It's a miracle.
It really is.
She's got a handle.
Really is.
President Biden's visit to Pittsburgh is part of a broader campaign to promote the White House's achievements in key states before the midterm elections, including his $1 trillion infrastructure law, which has earmarked about $1.6 billion for Pennsylvania bridge maintenance. He made remarks about it earlier.
A bridge more than 50 years old, collapsed right here in Pittsburgh. It had been rated in poor condition for the past 10 years. What you all know, if you don't, you should know, there are another 3,300 bridges here in Pennsylvania, some of which are just as old and just as decrepit condition as that bridge was, including here in Pittsburgh, the city of bridges. I've been coming to Pittsburgh a long time. I'm a Pennsylvania kid. I was born and raised the first part of my life in Pennsylvania, and I've been to Pittsburgh a lot. But all these years, I never knew Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, had more bridges than any other city in the world. Yo! But across the country, there are 45,000 bridges in poor condition. It's just simply unacceptable. That's why your governor and your members of Congress, your mayor, have been saying for years, we have to do something about this. I've talked about it every time I've come to Pittsburgh, and we finally got it done. A bipartisan infrastructure law, including the largest investment in our nation's bridges since Eisenhower put together the interstate highway system. And I might add, this is the first time in the country's history that we dedicated national program to repair and upgrade bridges. And it's about time. The governor can tell you We're giving state and local leaders historic funding to make national projects real. Here in Pennsylvania, that means at least $1.6 billion for bridges alone, $327 million in 2022 alone just to repair bridges. We've got to get it on with it. We got to move. The next time, we don't need headlines saying that someone was killed when the next bridge collapsed. We're also providing billions more for roads and so much more. We saw today when a bridge is in disrepair, it literally can threaten lives. As soon as we heard about the bridge, we were immediately in contact with the mayor. Mr. Mayor, you're doing a hell of a job. And the governor and other officials on the ground. And we're going to rebuild that bridge, along with thousands of other bridges in Pennsylvania and across the country, because it's in our interest, for our own safety's sake. And it generates commerce in a way that we can't do now. That's part of how we're going to build a better America.
President Biden speaking at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Meanwhile, despite invitations to join the president today, two of the three leading Democrats in Pennsylvania's statewide ballot this spring cited scheduling conflicts for not joining President Biden on his visit to the state. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, a leading Senate candidate, and State Attorney General Josh Shapiro, the likely Democratic nominee in the race for governor, did not join President Biden today. However, a top Senate candidate, Representative Connor Lamb, a longtime Biden supporter based in Pittsburgh, joined the president at the scene of the Fern Hollow Bridge collapse in Frick Park. Now, the three high-profile absences come as Democrats in other states have begun taking modest steps to distance themselves from the first-term president, whose approval ratings have fallen sharply in recent months. And now we turn to the U.S.-Russia-Ukraine situation. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance is prepared for worse and best-case scenarios as tensions between Russia and Ukraine continue to be high. Here's NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg responding to questions from CBS's Margaret Brennan.
But what I hear you saying there is that the intention of a deployment would be to contain the possibility of a regional conflict that would affect your members, not to deter Russia from attacking a country that is not a member, although a valued partner. Is that correct?
It's correct that we are not planning to deploy NATO combat troops to Ukraine.
And neither is the United States. But don't you think, and neither is the United States, President Biden has made that clear. And that has been one of the criticisms of NATO to date, that because going back to 2014, the United States and NATO were not willing to use force to deter aggression and annexation of territory from a NATO partner. I know, not a member. But that Vladimir Putin saw that. And that he knows now there is not a willingness to use force to stop him. Why should he take NATO seriously now?
So first of all, because our main task is to protect 30 allies, 1 billion people, territory in North America and Europe. That's our core task. And we demonstrate once again our commitment and our readiness and the capabilities to defend and deter any attack against NATO allies. So I am absolutely certain that President Putin and Russia takes NATO very serious when it comes to our ability to protect and defend all allies, and we demonstrate that every day. When it comes to Ukraine, I'm absolutely certain that Russia understands that they will have to pay a high price because they, after they used force against Ukraine in 2014, We have imposed severe sanctions on Ukraine. We have stepped up our support on sanctions on Russia after the use of force against Ukraine. We have provided support to Ukraine, stepped up that, and we have increased our presence in the eastern part of the alliance. So if with battle groups and more military presence in the eastern part of the alliance for the first time in our history. So if Russia wants less NATO at its borders, they have actually achieved exactly the opposite. And, and if they use force again against Ukraine, they will achieve even more NATO at their borders. So that's, of course, a price for Russia, meaning that they have consequences if they violate international law, if they invade another country. But the consequences are different if they invade a partner, Ukraine, than if they invade a NATO ally. And I think it's important to understand those differences and and what is NATO's core responsibilities.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg speaking at the Atlantic Council earlier. Now, this conversation comes as earlier in the week, the U.S. placed about 8,500 troops on alert to deploy to Eastern Europe if needed in support of NATO. Mr. Stoltenberg also touched on Russia's relationship with China and said he would not speculate as to whether they'll invade Ukraine as the Olympic Games get underway in Beijing. Meanwhile, at the Pentagon, military officials called on Russia to stand down as tensions rise over the threat of a Russian military incursion into Ukraine. We hear first from Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin.
As you know, for months now, Russia has been deploying forces to Crimea and along Ukraine's border, including in Belarus. It has progressed at a consistent and steady pace involving tens of thousands of Russian troops, and it is being supported by increased Russian naval activity in the Northern Atlantic and the Mediterranean Sea. While we don't believe that President Putin has made a final decision to use these forces against Ukraine, he clearly now has that capability. And there are multiple options available to him, including the seizure of cities and significant territories, but also coercive acts or provocative political acts like the recognition of breakaway territories. Indeed, we're seeing Russian state media spouting off now about alleged activities in eastern Ukraine. Now, this is straight out of the Russian playbook, and they're not fooling us. We remain focused on Russian disinformation, including the potential creation of pretext for further invasion or strikes on Donbas, and any Russian attack or further incursion into Ukraine would not only ignite conflict, it would also violate the bedrock principles of national sovereignty, territorial integrity, and self-determination.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin briefing reporters at the Pentagon. He was also joined by Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley. Here's what he had to say.
Ukraine has the right to be independent, and they have been an independent country since 1991. Russia signed the Budapest Memorandum in 1994 with the United States and Great Britain that guaranteed the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. It's the policy of the United States government to continue to support an independent Ukraine and their goals, and we are continuing our effort to enhance their ability to protect themselves. We strongly encourage Russia to stand down and to pursue a resolution through diplomacy. Armed force should always be the last resort. Success here is through dialogue. The Russian Federation has amassed upwards at this time of over 100,000 ground forces, air forces, naval forces, special forces, cyber, electronic warfare, command and control, logistics, engineers, and other capabilities along the Ukraine border.
Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley. Both military leaders have repeatedly urged a diplomatic solution to the situation. Speaking on the Glenn Beck radio show, former President Donald Trump gave his views on the situation.
Well, Europe should be totally involved. When Germany made the pipeline deal, I sent a white flag to Angela, who I got along with actually very well. Different side of the plate, but that's okay. She had views that were a lot different than mine in many cases. But I sent the white flag of surrender because Germany made a deal with Russia with the pipeline. And Nord Stream is a disaster. And I'm the one that brought that out. Nobody even knew about it. Mm-hmm. I used to talk about it all the time. Then they'd say, oh, he's weak in Russia. Putin would say, you're killing me with this pipeline. But I got it stopped. And it was stopped. It was stopped cold. But I told Angela, I said, you're tying your whole country into Russia because once you're going to get energy, and don't listen to them when they say 20%. It's 72% or more of their energy is going to come out of Russia. That means that Russia controls them. Russia owns Germany. In one of the dumbest moves I've ever seen, where they're getting their energy, a large portion. And it's, remember, it's over 70%. They're trying to say it's 30 and 40%. And even if that is too much, but it's over 70%. They closed their plants. They closed their nuclear plants and other plants. They got rid of coal, which was, you know, steaming it to greatness because, frankly, the coal was, you know, they had great ability. Right now they're having brownouts and every other thing. But they're getting their energy from Russia. So Russia has total control over Germany. And Germany's saying, oh, well, we don't want to fight them. They can't fight them because of what's happening with the energy. So it's very interesting to see. But I would really say it is a European problem.
Former President Donald Trump speaking on The Glenn Beck Show. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are some other stories that we're following. The Coast Guard said it suspended its rescue operations Thursday night after announcing earlier that afternoon that it had found four additional bodies in its search for dozens of migrants lost at sea off Florida. Homeland Security investigations officials have said they were actively investigating the case as a human smuggling operation. The Associated Press reporting that authorities have now found a total of five bodies, leaving 34 missing 5 days after the vessel capsized on the way to Florida from the Bahamas, just 55 miles east of Miami. The House committee investigating the U.S. Capitol insurrection subpoenaed more than a dozen individuals today who it says falsely tried to declare Donald Trump the winner of the 2020 election in seven swing states. TheHill.com reporting that the panel is demanding information and testimony from 14 people who the panel says allegedly met and submitted false Electoral College certificates declaring Trump the winner of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, New Mexico, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Now, that's according to a letter from Mississippi Representative Benny Thompson, the Democratic chairman of the panel. President Joe Biden won all seven states. Now, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis poses a bigger threat to President Joe Biden in 2024 than former President Donald Trump. That's according to a new Marquette Law School survey. Newsweek is reporting that President Biden would beat both Republican contenders, but his lead is smaller against the Florida governor. The survey asked 1,000 adults how they would vote if the 2024 presidential election were held on that day. Biden had a 43% support, with Trump on 33%. That's according to the poll. There's another 16% that said they would vote for someone else, and 6% said they wouldn't vote. In a Biden-DeSantis matchup, however, the president's lead slips to just 8 percentage points. Marquette recorded support of 41% for Biden and 33% for DeSantis. On Fox News, former Vice President Mike Pence spoke about President Biden's policies.
But I got to tell you, the gasoline prices are like nothing I have ever seen. But again, once again, it's the result of the policies of the Biden-Harris administration. We had achieved energy independence for the first time in 70 years by unleashing American energy as never before. And energy prices were low across the board from day one. I mean, think about this, Jesse, that here's an administration, one of the first things they do is shut down an American pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, and authorize the construction of a Russian pipeline to Germany to make Germany and Europe more dependent on Russian natural gas. The policies of this administration are, I want to say that they make no sense, but frankly, they do make sense to the radical left.
When's the last time you talked to former President Trump? You guys good?
You know, we talked last summer, and, you know, I've said many times, it was difficult. January 6th was difficult. It was a tragic day in the life of the nation. I know I did my duty under the Constitution of the United States, but the president and I sat down in the days that followed that. We spoke about it, talked through it. We parted amicably.
Former Vice President Mike Pence speaking on Fox News. The headline at WashingtonTimes.com reads, GOP woos minorities with meals, movie nights at new community centers in cities, border towns. That's by Washington Times Capitol Hill reporter Mika Solner. Where are these new centers?
So these new RNC-run centers are popping up all across the country. We're seeing them in key swing states. We're seeing them in Georgia, Texas, Wisconsin, California, and the latest one opened today in North Carolina, just to name a few of the states, but they are highly expanding.
Now, your article quotes an RNC director in that area saying, quote, "We just look to where there is going to be the most impactful place. For the most part, it happens to be where the Black-owned businesses are, where the Asian Pacific American businesses are, and where the Hispanic-owned businesses are." Now, this begs the question, are these areas where there are reports of redistricting, removal, and or limited ballot drop boxes, or the closure of voting cities, all in a state where Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill into law that limits the teaching of critical race theory? If so, with all of that as a backdrop, what is the GOP's recruitment message to Blacks and Hispanic voters?
Yeah, so we are seeing them in areas where there's tightened restrictions or movements to tighten voting procedures in places like Texas and Florida. So the GOP is trying to send a message to, recruit more minority support through a message of economic opportunity and education, as we saw mirrored in Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin's campaign, which he successfully ran on. On the other hand, with the voting measures, Democrats are also utilizing that to their advantage to push a message of the GOP being stringent on restricting voting rights. So it's a very different kind of message that both parties are tailoring in these areas.
Yeah, a recent poll shows that Democrats are losing ground with independent and suburban voters. Washington Times Capitol Hill reporter Mika Solnor, you write in your article at WashingtonTimes.com, quote, "A Democratic National Committee aide dismissed the community centers as more optics than an earnest attempt to connect with a diverse set of voters." So what are Democrats doing to keep and attract new minority voters?
Democrats are really pushing the message of voter suppression and tying the Republicans to that, given what's occurring in state legislatures around the country with GOP-dominated lawmakers, and then Democrats are trying to push, more expansive voting procedures, which they say will benefit minority communities that might have harder to access time at the ballot box. So that's their big message. But as we know, Democrats have always kind of invested their resources in retaining their base for various minority voters, which have typically largely voted in favor of the Democratic Party.
So that's the next question then. Is either group finding success with these communities?
I think it's going to matter what's happening at the grassroots level. Both parties are going out there very early in this campaign cycle, which is beneficial for anybody. And I think recruitment efforts for both parties in terms of getting people on their staff that look like the people that are trying to reach is very vital and important for both. For the GOP, particularly, this is this isn't necessarily a new phenomenon, but I think this is the first time that it's really kind of gained momentum given their recent gains in particularly Hispanic, but also some Black voters in 2020 and in, if we're looking at Virginia, in that race as well.
So what does the future look like for these efforts?
I think it is vital to note that, we're going to continue to see the Republicans try and mobilize this new group of voters that typically haven't really gone for the party before. And I think it's going to be extremely important for the party to expand their base, especially as their traditional group of conservative voters is shrinking as we see the demographics of the country rapidly changing continuously.
Washington Times Capitol Hill reporter Mika Solnor. You can find her article at WashingtonTimes.com. Thank you for helping us to understand these Get Out the Vote efforts.
Thank you so much.
President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden have finally added the long-promised cat to their pet family. Her name is Willow, and she's a 2-year-old green-eyed, gray-and-white farm cat from Pennsylvania. The First Lady named Willow after her hometown of Willow Grove, Pennsylvania. And on this day in history, at 11:38 a.m. Eastern, on January 28, 1986, the Space Shuttle Challenger lifted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida. 73 seconds later, the shuttle broke up in a forking plume of smoke and fire. Millions watched the tragedy unfold on live television. There were no survivors. Aboard the shuttle was a 37-year-old high school social studies teacher, Krista McAuliffe. She won a competition that earned her a place among the 7-member crew of the Challenger.
Today is a day for mourning and remembering. Nancy and I are pained to the core by the tragedy of the shuttle Challenger. We know we share this pain with all of the people of our country. This is truly a national loss. 19 years ago, almost to the day, we lost three astronauts in a terrible accident on the ground. But we've never lost an astronaut in flight. We've never had a tragedy like this. And perhaps we've forgotten the courage it took for the crew of the shuttle. But they, the Challenger 7, were aware of the dangers, but overcame them and did their jobs brilliantly. We mourn seven heroes: Michael Smith, Dick Scobee, Judith Resnick, Ronald McNair, Allison Onizuka, Gregory Jarvis, and Krista Mikulov. We mourn their loss as a nation together.
In the aftermath of the disaster, President Ronald Reagan appointed a special commission to determine what went wrong with the Challenger and to develop future corrective measures. The presidential commission was headed by former Secretary of State William Rogers and included former astronaut Neil Armstrong and former test pilot Chuck Yeager. The Space Shuttle Challenger explosion on this day in history. A reminder that all of our coverage is online anytime at cspan.org. And if you missed any of this program, you can find it at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington, delivered daily right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.